Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Beautiful. So nice to hear. Let's do chant number 15.
Antar-vrik-vrishya-yor-bhedam Bahishcha-brahma-sargayoho Avrinotya-parashaktihi Samsarasya karanam.
Antar, antaha, drik, drishya yoho. So antar, drik, drishya yoho. Bhedam, bahihi, cha, brahma, sarga yoho. Avrinoti, apara shakti, shaktihi, apara shaktihi. Sa samsarasya karanam. In the previous two verses, in 13 and 14, the vikshepa shakti was introduced. At the beginning of 13, it says Maya has twofold shaktis, twofold powers, vikshepa and avarana, or avriti, same thing, okay, avarana, avriti, same root. So then the second line of 13 and all of 14 is talking about the vikshepa shakti, the projection of the creation. Now we're going to talk about the avriti, the avarana shakti. Okay? So here, just to go through the Sanskrit of the verse, antar, inside, right? Inside as opposed to outside. Bahihi is outside. Means that what I objectify with my sense organs is bahihi, what is internal to the body is antar, inside. So here, drik drishyayoho bedam. So inside means an inside, the drik drishyayoho beda, the distinction, the beda, the difference between, so the yoho is genitive. Genitive often, if it's a dwendal compound, has two members in it, a compound like drik and drisha, then we can use between, right? So that's a nice thing to know in the Sanskrit. The distinction, the difference between the drik, the seer, and the seen. So drik, drisha, yoho, bedam, the difference, genitive, so 6-2, the difference between the seer and the seen, internally, and then bahihi cha, and externally, Brahma sarga yoho, between Brahman and the creation. Sarga is the creation. Same as Srishti. Sarga is another form. So the difference between internally, between the seer and the seen, and bahihi, externally, between, that's again 6-2, between the Brahman, between Brahman and the creation. So here it says, Avranoti apara shaktihi. Shaktihi is feminine. So apara shaktihi, the other shakti, the other power, because we've already done the vikshepa shakti, the shakti, that power of projecting. Apara shaktihi is the other one, the other shakti. Avranoti, it covers. It's a, that, you know, is the fifth gana. The other one, ninth gun is na. So avranoti, apara shakti, that the other shakti that we call avarana shakti, that one covers. What does it cover? The distinction, the beda between the drik, the seer, and the seen internally, and it covers the beda, the distinction, the difference between Brahman and the creation, bahihi, externally. See it? Sa, that avarana shakti. Sa, apara shakti, That other shakti that we call avadana or avriti, that shakti, samsarasya karanam, that shakti is the cause of samsara. That's an important one for us. The avadana shakti is what causes, is the self-ignorance, is the maya. The maya, when it manifests as the creation, remember, it has these two shaktis. For Ishvara, the vikshepa shakti is the only one that's in operation. The whole maya projects in the form of the universe. And there is no ajnanam, there is no ignorance at all. So the whole creation is my being, is mitya, means it totally depends on me, for it's an expression of myself that has no independent reality whatsoever. Just like I can so nicely say that about my mind just comes from me, it doesn't harm my, doesn't change myself in any way. It comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. I am asanga, the asanga atma, I remain always totally the same. I don't become the creation. I haven't changed into the creation and then have to undo all of that to come back to myself. Remaining exactly the same. This maya vritti, these maya vrittis, these mithya vrittis, these mithya thought modifications, experiences, they come from me, are sustained by me, go back into me without touching or harming me in any way. So even from the standpoint of my own self, and what we call the vivarta upadana karana, I'm the material cause, the sat-chit, the conscious being, which all of these vrittis that I have enjoyed, they all are known, that's the chit, and they all exist, that's the sat. Every vritti, every imagination, every experience you have, has for its being, for its truth. Truth means what is actually there as the substance, the truth of that experience, that's the sat, the satyam. And so the sat is the conscious being is the sat, is what is actually there as the self of that experience, itself undergoing no change whatsoever, which means that the experience I'm having is what we call mithya. Mithya means it has no independent being at all. It depends 100% on my being for it to be. You can understand when an imagination comes, when it is there, it is. When it is there, it is. When it is there, it is known. The instant it goes away, it is gone. Because it has no being of its own for it to fly away on its own, taking something with it. It goes into non-existence because it has separated itself from being, we can say. Like every thought is like that. Here's the thought, it is gone. It is gone. Where does it go? It doesn't go anywhere. It's not like it's gone, going. It is gone. It is not present now. It is not manifest in any way. So that means that from your own experience, it is mithya. Mithya means it's reality. It's even the experience of it. The experience of it totally depends upon my being. Like rope snake, clay pot, wave ocean, and myself in reference to every thought that I have. So this mithyatva that we talked about quite a bit yesterday has to be understood. And so when we say for the vikshepa, Ishvara, just using the vikshepa shakti, the capacity to project of maya, you know, the whole creation projects, is, you know, comes from me, as Ishvara talking, comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. There's nothing happening to me, I remain as the Sangha Atma. That's all. As clear to Bhagavan as your relationship to your thoughts are to you, you know, or to your imagination is to you. You don't take yourself dull as, I'm changing into the imagination. You don't even think like that. You know, you understand thoroughly without even having somebody explain it to you, the mityatva of the imagination. Right? It comes from me, sustained by me, resolves into me. I remain exactly the same. Right? It can't take me away. Right? It can't do anything to me. And so for Ishvara, the whole creation, that vikshepa shakti, the maya, you know, projects as the creation to sustain, projects, sustain, resolve from beginningless time. It's considered to be cyclical from beginningless time. That vikshepa shakti. But that vikshepa shakti for Ishvara is the maya acts as an avadana, a covering for the jiva. And so now, in this verse, how does it how is it a covering? What does that mean? So he says, what, first of all, what is covered? How does that Maya cover, and what does it cover? And he says, it covers in tune for the Jiva, not for Ishwara, for the Jiva, the one who's really a product or part of the creation that is projected. First of all, it covers the relationship between the seer and the seen. Because as we started in the first few verses, you recognize that everything that you had taken to be you, the seer, the sakshi, the conscious being, is all of it, you know, all of it is really, you know, the seen. Right? I take my body to be the seer, my sense organs to be the seer, but they're actually objectified. They are objects. They're drishas. You know, I have taken them to be the drik, the seer. Then I recognize actually they are not the seer, they are seen. They can function as the seer, but when you say they function as the seer, like your sense organs do, those sense organs are always seen also. So now they're not me, the seer, they're instruments which I use, right? Like my glasses. I didn't take myself to be my glasses, but they're very useful for me to see, right? So your sense organs are like your glasses. They're something that you utilize, right? But they are also objectified. They're functional instruments which are objectified. So now, here is a distinction that I had not made before. Why I probably had not made that seer-seeing distinction is because of the avadana shakti of maya, the maya's capacity to cover any jiva within this creation, to cover to hide that beta, that distinction between what is ultimately the seer, me, and what is ultimately the seen. What is the nature of myself, really, and what is the nature of everything that is drishya. Drishya means capable of being objectified. You know, potential participle, drishya, that which can be objectified. So the drik, the seer, ultimately cannot be objectified. Then it becomes a drishya, right? And then who is objectifying it? So ultimately, the seer is only the satchitatma. It's only conscious being itself, right? But that is not known and until it is. That's the avarana. The avarana hides all of that and causes me to take myself to be the what we call a superimposition between, I take myself to be what is actually a superimposition between the seer and the seen, due to the sattva of the mind and the sense organs, with that reflecting of consciousness. Why am I not the conscious being? I experience myself as the conscious being. There's no viveka. So this drishya beda is hidden from us until we have a means of knowledge to make us see. When we have a means of knowledge to make us see, it's actually a revelation of the obvious. But until it's seen, it's unknown. Does it need to be known? There's nothing in your mind that says, hey, you know, am I the seer or the seen? Who's going to ask that? Am I the seer or the seen? So you have to be a little, some mumukshutvam or some past samskaras are arising up in order for you to even question it. My mom told me she wanted to know a little Vedanta she didn't really want to know at all, actually, but when I got home from India, she wanted to know, tell me something about your trip, she said. I started telling her a little bit about Vedanta, you know. And she stopped me pretty quickly and she said, oh, honey, I don't have those kind of problems. That's not what she wanted to know at all. She wanted to know about India and, you know, where I stayed. And not these kind of problems. Okay, so here, for us who do have these problems. This, of this maya, this, we've got the vikshepa shakti and the avarana that covers, that creates this covering between who is ultimately me, the one that cannot be objectified because conscious being itself. That's never going to fall into the category of something which is objectified or seen. Whereas your body, your sense organs, your mind, your thoughts, your moods, your emotions, your relationship, time, space itself, all fall into, upon analysis, the whole universe falls into the category of drishya, that which is can be objectified. Atma, yourself, cannot be objectified because who would be objectifying it? And you have to bring in another atma, you have to bring in another conscious being. So when you get to consciousness itself, there's no such thing as objectification anymore. In fact, you can't be objectified, nor can you be an object. You can't become an object to be objectified. It's not possible. And you don't need to, because you are consciousness itself. So your being, when I say in the meditation, you know, just be yourself. Yeah, but who's going to light me up? Who's going to illumine me then? Who's going to know me? If I'm just being myself, then will I be in the dark? You'll never be in the dark, because you're the light because of which everything is known. You're the knownness, the consciousness itself, because of which, after which all things shine. But because you are that light, kind of like the sun, because you are self-evident, self-luminous, you don't need any other luminary, you are the luminary. It's like the sun saying, well, we have to bring in another sun to light up the sun. That's how it becomes ridiculous. The sun doesn't need another sun to light it up, it is the light itself. In my conscious me, I am my own self-experience without any dvaita, without any duality at all in consciousness. And this consciousness, because of the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness, which means I am known without any type of duality, everything is anubhati, shines after that. So my mind is known. My sense perceptions are known. My emotions are known. The universe is known. The universe of my experience, all is known. The is-knownness doesn't come from the universe. It comes from me. I am the self-evident knownness which everything shines after. So once I get to me, then there is no further drikdrisha. That process has been completed. In terms of differentiation, in terms of viveka. So, but until that happens, that differentiation, that viveka is not there. And so, this body is a conscious being, therefore I am this body. This mind enjoys consciousness, therefore I am my mind. My emotions enjoy consciousness, therefore I am happy, sad, angry, whatever. Right? There's this mutual superimposition taking place. No drisha viveka, no seer seeing discrimination, and that is what makes me a jiva. That ajnanam, that self-ignorance, makes me a jiva, a limited being within Ishwara's creation. So that's the one the first thing, internally what is covered, what the kind of the veil of darkness, what is veiled, is this drisha viveka in terms of the seer and the seen. And then externally, in terms of the world, what is covered is the relationship between Brahman, between the infinite conscious being, which is in fact my nature, and this universe that I experience through my sense organs, through objectification. Whatever is objectified belongs to, it is the universe, right? Everything that exists within time and space, in every level of reality, what we call a loka, all of the different worlds, in every world that we may, as we reincarnate, you know, land in this loka or that loka or this loka for a limited period of time. So every level of experience that exists within duality, right, that is the sarga. Sarga means creation, srishti. That is the creation. Now, just think, this room is a creation. Okay, so here we find ourselves just in this room. And we do not make any differentiation, until we do, we don't make any differentiation between existence and this room. This exists. If I say, yeah, this table, this couch, you know, this little platform couch, of course it exists. Here it is. I see it. I'm experiencing it. Of course the floor is. Of course the wall is. Of course the clock is. Of course my clothes are. Of course I am. There's no even the slightest thought of differentiating being itself from the nama-rupas, from the names and forms that I experience. I don't think, you know, do you think that maybe existence is the noun? Existence is the noun, and these are all as though adjectives of the noun. What? We probably have never thought that way. You may have, but then I would say if you have thought that way, you are bringing some scars over from your last life. I don't think that's a normal way to think, right? That's not how we see things. We use the word is as just a marker. We're just acknowledging the presence of something. Yeah, there's the yoga mat. The yoga mat is there. We don't say, what if I were to say to you, the yoga mat is. Would you say it? The yoga mat is. The floor is. Would you say that? I don't think so. You just say, that's the floor, that's the yoga mat. You know, is irrelevant. You know, so sometimes Swamiji talks like this, you know, you have to now differentiate being or isness from the nama-rupas. So once I remember him saying, I'll just use the objects in the room, he would say, you know, lamp existence, chair existence, floor existence, you know, clock existence, ocean existence, means all as though attributes of being, not being, and as though attribute of the object. We just take being and the object to be one. It's here, so therefore it exists. If it's destroyed, it no longer exists. But if it's here, it exists. And so the existence that it is enjoying and the object itself, the nama-rupa itself, are just one and the same thing. And it loses its existence when it's gone. You've destroyed it, you've wrecked it, you know. It no longer exists. You broke it. Now it's no longer there. But whatever. There are things we can say about that. So there's no viveka between the being, which is the very being of all nama-rupa, name and form, including the being of this nama-rupa, right? Being itself is not, existence itself is not objectifiable. It's the very adhishtana, means the very thing upon what the mitya depends. Everything enjoys being, without exception, every vritti that you have, every experience that you have, it is. But the isness is the what we call the adhishtana. It is the truth which the mitya depends on. When you say the rope is the adhishtana of the snake totally depends upon that rope for its being. That's called the adhishtana. The clay is the adhishtana of the pot. Without the adhishtana, there is no pot. So existence as the noun is the adhishtana of every sarva nama-rupa, of every nama-rupa, of every name and form in this creation. Every name and form, what they mean by that is through all of your sense organs and all of the type of vrittis, thought modifications you can have, those things that can be objectified is what is meant when you say sarva nama-rupa, all nama-rupas. The whole creation that is objectified. Okay, those are all of the nama-rupas. All of those nama-rupas have for their adhishtana one sat-chit-atma, one existence, which is chit consciousness, which is knownness, which is self-evident. So self-evident being, which is limitless, sat-chit-ananda. Limitless wholeness means I am the being for which all of this is an expression. So how can I be less than my expression? You know? But what happens with a jnanam for the avarana, even though this entire creation is an expression of my being, because there's that ajnanam there, that self-ignorance there, then I want this one. I want that. I want that little expression. I don't think of it as an expression. I just say, I want that thing. I want that thing. So I've identified, I've projected my ananda on these little limited things. Let me have that. I would be so happy if I had that. When actually the entire infinite creation, you know, is my infinite expression of me. How can my swarupa, my nature, be less than that infinite expression? You know, the infinite expression comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. So I am the ananda. I am the absolute wholeness from which this infinite expression is though bubbles out, you know, bursts out. And that expression that bursts out has me only for its adhishtana. That's why everything in this expression, as you analyze it, comes into being, goes out of being. It's infinitely divisible. You can't find anything here. It goes into an infinite regress of divisibility. Any nama-rupa, you dissect it, dissect it, dissect it, and never comes to an end as long as the form exists within space, you can dissect it. And so you're going to go into an infinite regress there, because as long as the form takes up space, no matter how small, you can dissect it. And another reason, another thing, there is nothing here to grab onto, because everything comes into being and goes out of being. How long does any given thing last? How long, this is a fun question. How long is one moment? A moment is that which has come into being and gone out of being. How long is one moment? And we would say, that is impossible to come up with the length of a moment, because as long as it takes up time, it's divisible into two more moments. As long as it takes up time. If it doesn't take up time, then there's no question, it's timeless, it's not a moment. Right? But as long as it takes up time, you know, it can be divided into two moments, and then those two moments can be themselves divided, and those moments can be divided, and those moments can be divided. It goes into an infinite regress. So that in that way, you can never, ever find a moment, something that has come into being and goes out of being. So it's here, whatever the experience is here for a moment, but you can't find a moment because it's infinitely divisible. Swamiji used to always use the example of for this, and you know, when you do a ritual, when you do a puja, often there'll be roses that are being offered to Dakshinamurti, to Nanishwar, to the deity, roses. And what they'll do is they'll pull off all of the petals of the roses, so there'll be a pile of petals, right? And then those petals by the handful will just offer. In fact, in Swamiji's 60th birthday, which is a huge birthday, a huge, very important birthday, we went to Rishikesh for the celebration of his birthday, and they went all out. So we had planes full of flowers coming into Dehradun, into that air close by airport. So these, you know, truckloads of flowers were arriving, and they were taking these big, huge vats and filling them with petals that they, so all of the people were sitting around making all of these petals with vats, big wooden, you know, barrels filled with petals. And so as this birthday celebration was going on, we would all go and do our pranams and, you know, to Swamiji. But first we would dive in and get this handful of petals and offer it to Swamiji, you know. And by the time it was done, there was just his little head there. And this, in this mountain of rose petals. It was very amazing. It was just, it's really something. It was a beautiful ceremony. So imagine taking a handful of rose petals and putting them side by side by side by side. So maybe you have the rose petals this thick, lined up, and you kind of press to make them tight together. So maybe there's 500 rose petals, whatever. Then you take a needle and you put it through those rose petals. So in less than a moment, like that, because the rose is so soft and delicate, the petal just goes right through all 500 of them. And so then we say, you know, how many moments are there? Just in terms of the rose petals, because it only went through one petal at a time. So in that instant that we call a moment is actually 500 moments. And like that, a moment, any moment goes into an infinite regress in terms of its divisibility. But now for any moment, there's a before and an after, right? There's a coming into being of the moment and a going out of being of the moment, right? And you can't find the moment. You can't find the moment. So what is this creation? There's nothing here except an infinite expression that we experience of you, of your being. Not of the body-mind-sense organs. The body-mind-sense organs is part and parcel of this infinite expression, kind of like a dream. You have a dream that's an expression of you. Okay? And the jivas, all of the individuals within the dream, are part of that expression. So when I say this infinite expression is an infinite expression of you, I mean who you really are, the Atma, the Self. The Self, which is Brahman. The Atma, we say the word Atma, talking about this Pratyagatma. Pratyaga means innermost. This innermost me. After I've done the Driksha Viveka, I recognize the me, the one who can no longer be objectified. And what is the teaching of all of the Upanishads? Is that this me is Brahman. This me is non-dual consciousness from which the whole universe manifests. That's what we mean by Brahman. Sometimes we say it like this, this Atma is the self, myself, my innermost self. What is the innermost self of Ishwara, this whole infinite expression? That is Brahman. So Atma self we call Brahman. The individual self we call Atma. What is the Mahavakya of the Mahavakya means the essential teaching of all of the Upanishads. It's called Mahavakya. What is it? I am Brahman. I am Atma, Brahma. This self is Brahman. Just so I can say, this self, that is me, is you. This self is the cat. This self is the worm. This self is the bird. This self is Ishwara. This self is the clock. There is nothing that is not this self. This whole creation is a manifestation of this one non-dual self, which is limitless because there is nothing else. So instead of saying limitless, we say non-dual. The self that I am is non-dual. Means it. There is nothing else here. How can we say that when we experience this whole creation? We can say it because this whole creation is mitya. It depends on me for its being. Like what if I say to you, the clay pot is only clay. The clay pot is just one non-dual clay. From the standpoint of the clay pot, it's just one non-dual clay. No, there's a pot there. No, you experience a pot there. You experience a pot there, but all that is there is clay. In spite of the experience of pot, there's only clay. In spite of the experience of this creation, subject, object, you know, seer, seeing, all this, there is, in fact, only one non-dual Brahman, which is myself. So, until I gain knowledge, though, this Brahma-Sarga-Beda, this distinction between Brahman and this creation as mitya, the Brahman is satyam, is that which actually is, and the creation is mitya, that is unknown. All we know is mitya, which we don't call mitya. We don't call this creation as mitya. We say this is the creation, which I find myself in. If you're a jnani, if you have knowledge, then this creation is mitya, that really is an expression of my non-dual self. I am the very being of this creation. I am the sat-chit of this creation, of this body, of this mind, of the sense organs, of everything that exists in duality. Its being is one non-dual me alone. Okay. So until that is known, this avarana shakti is at work. Okay. This covering is at work. And it is that covering, that avarana, sa samsara. That is responsible for the samsara. Samsara, what we mean by samsara is that because I identify with this body, mind, sense organs, and I take this creation to be real, and I'm a little pocket of consciousness walking through this conscious being, walking through this creation, what is my experience in the creation? And even if I accept the transmigration of the jiva, even then, for me, samyak saraha, everything is continually on the move. Samyak means it never stops. It moves very well, you know. It is never, never still. So that means all of my experiences externally and internally in terms of the drisha, in terms of these, the things that I experience in terms of my mind, of my buddhi, you know, the physical body gets old and dies. you know, grows up, gets old, and dies. That's what it has a lot of decay in the life. So that's the process of that any living being goes through. You know, my sense organs degenerate in time, you know, and then all of my likes and dislikes go on changing, and then sometimes I have something that I love and it goes away, and then I have something that I absolutely hate and it stays. This goes on and on and on. All of these types of changes. I can't stop the fact that it changes. I can't stop the changing creation. And I have superimposed all of my ananda, all of my happiness because of desire, all of my being onto this creation, and I'm seeking, I'm trying to find myself, trying to experience myself really through the fulfillment of my desires, so that I can have some shantivritti, so that I can feel close to myself, that this is how I'm supposed to be. I'm still just looking to have an experience in the shantivritti, but the shantivritti is something that resonates with me. Yeah, and so this is the samsara that I find myself in. There's not too much I can do about it. I think there's something I can do about it. And at some point I realize, no, there's nothing I can do about it, because the nature of the creation, in terms of making the creation work for me, I can live a dharmic life. That's the best I can do, live a dharmic life. And still everything goes on changing. But my commitment is to dharma, and I have a choice over that. I have some choice over it. And dharma, even though everything is changing, dharma protects me. It gives me some shanti. So that much I can do, but I can't stop everything from changing. I can't stop myself from changing. I can't stop my desires from changing. Somebody that I loved at one moment, now I don't love anymore. Somebody who loved me now doesn't love me anymore. It's just a nightmare. Yeah. It's good. It makes us into mumukshus. Like you finally say, oh my God. What is going on, Bhagavan? If you're there, and if you're the solution to this, please help me now. If you're there, if there's a solution to this, please help me, so that I can be what I seek. What I really seek is to be whole and complete, and I thought I could somehow get that out of the creation. I realized that's an absolute impossibility, because there's nothing steady in the creation. Nothing stays the same. So you're just going to get this variation and this variation and this variation, but then everything, you know, all comes and dies. You have something that you really like, and boom, it's gone. So you just realize it must be, because you know yourself as a full being. It's not like you don't know. You've had that experience. You know, Swamiji will say like this, you know what a good cup of coffee is. In India, you know that Madras coffee, they love that Madras coffee. So you know what that best cup of coffee is. And nothing else is comparing to it. You had that best cup of coffee, and I want to have it again. You've had those moments of being yourself. You want that again. You have no idea what is the magical combination to give me that, even a glimpse, let alone to just let me be that. I would like to just be that without having to worry about it. Not having to protect it. Just me, just be that. There must be a way, because I've experienced it. But until I know that, until I recognize a self that is free from time, in fact, I've always been that. It's only self-ignorance that causes stopping me from knowing that. But until that, I know that, I'm seeking to get that out of the creation. I'm seeking to get that well-being from the creation. And I realize the creation is always changing, I'm always changing, I can't get it. Bhagavan, please. That knowledge needs to take place in order to remove that avarana. That covering, self-knowledge needs to take place in order to remove that covering that makes a jiva out of me. You know, makes this one who's subject to transmigration, subject to self-ignorance. So, good. Let's do the next verse.
Sakshinah purato bhati lingam dehena samyutam Chitti chaya samadeshat.
Jivasya vyavaharikah. Sakshinaha puritaha bhati lingam dehena samyutam. Chitti chaya samaveshat jivaha syat vyavaharikah. So now we're just starting to look at how is it that we fall into this situation of being a jiva, means of taking myself to be this limited conscious being within the creation. What is actually happening? So he says, the linga sharira, see where it says lingam there? That linga, the linga sharira means the subtle body, right? Is sakshinaha puritaha, it's in the vicinity, it's next to as though next to consciousness, right? So here, next to consciousness is the sakshi. So, for instance, your mind, there's no different distance between the knownness of consciousness and the sattva of the mind, the reflection. It's not like consciousness is here, or, you know, the sakshi is here, and then the mind is somewhere over here where there's some sort of gap between the consciousness of the sakshi and the reflection of consciousness that we call the mind or the sense organs or the linga sharira or the sukshma sharira in general. It itself reflects consciousness, so there's going to be no distance between the consciousness and the sukshma sharira. That's the idea. So because the sukshma sharira, which is itself inert, but it's not shining of its own accord, it is illumined. It is illumined, but it reflects consciousness because of the sattva. But from its own standpoint, if the consciousness would be removed, it would just be there without any consciousness. It depends totally on consciousness, for its being, for its bhati. Bhati means that it's shining. It itself is enjoying consciousness. Right? It itself is having the experience of being a conscious being. So it's as though conscious, but it's conscious as though, because the consciousness that is manifesting in it is really only the Atma, the self. It doesn't have any from its own standpoint. It's just like if I hold up a mirror to my face or a mirror to the sun, the sun is being illumined, the sun is there in the mirror. The mirror is being illumined and it is also mirroring back the sun. But without the sun, neither is the mirror being illumined, nor is it mirroring back the sun. But it is inert from its own standpoint. The linga sharira also is mitya, it's maya, it's sattva. It's inert from its own standpoint, that it is not the source of consciousness. But it shines, bhati, it shines because consciousness illumines it, and there's no distance between the luminary, between consciousness, really non-dual consciousness, there's no distance at all between the consciousness and the linga sharira, being sattva, which reflects that consciousness. So the sakshinaha puritaha, being in the vicinity, being next to, being conjoined, whatever, however you want to say it, the linga sharira shines, okay? It shines. It is as though a conscious being, because the consciousness illumines it. And that linga sharira, the sukshma sharira, is now united, samyutam, it's indwelling, it's united with this physical body, right? Because it's the linga sharira, the sukshma sharira, that takes birth after birth after birth, according to your karma. That means it's this subtle body will take a physical body. Take a physical body means it pervades that physical body, it enlivens it. It, because of it, the sense organs work. Because of it, the prana works. Because of it, the organs of action work. If the subtle body enlivens this body, which would otherwise be a dead carcass, it itself doesn't have any consciousness. It is enlivened by the conscious being that we call the sukshma sharira, with all of its capacities, including the prana and the karmendriyas, the organs of action, the sense organs, the intakarana, the mind. That is what feels and penetrates the body, fills it with consciousness. So now, this linga, this sukshma sharira, which itself reflects consciousness, now because of karma, is joined with a physical body, pervades a physical body. So what does that mean? Now the physical body enjoys the consciousness that the linga sharira enjoys. Right? So the linga sukshma sharira reflects consciousness, and now it pervades the deha, the physical body, and enlivens it. And so now this physical body, I can say, yeah, I'm a conscious being. My body, I'm a conscious, sentient being, you know, who sees, who thinks, who feels. I am conscious. I am a conscious being. When we say that, say no knowledge at all, but I ask you, are you a conscious being? Yeah. I'm a conscious being. You don't say, I don't know. Unless you're playing with language, if you say, I don't know. Yeah, of course I'm a conscious being. I'm not inert. I'm not jada, you know. I'm a conscious being. But actually, this body is inert. It is jada. And another level, the sukshma sharira also is inert. It is jada. It's not the source of consciousness. It's not the consciousness itself. But that's not my experience. It's not my experience in reference to this physical body, which is once removed, right? Because it's the linga sharira that is reflecting the consciousness, not this body, which is made of tamas, you know, which is inert. It's the linga sharira reflecting me, enjoying me as though, pervades this physical body, right? And then the physical body now enjoys the consciousness brought about by the pervasion of the subtle body. Okay, so that being so, then what happens? Chitti chaya samaveshat. Because of the association of this body with the reflection of consciousness, the jivaha, this linga sharira, now having a body, becomes jivaha syat vyavaharika jiva. It becomes this embodied person, right? Jiva. Jiva means the jiva, this conscious being that you are, is what we call the jiva, the conscious body that is identified with the linga sharira, with the subtle body, and now with the physical body, because the subtle body is pervading the physical body. The one, because of self-ignorance, I take myself to be that. So what is really happening here is the atma, which is Brahman, which is never changes in any way, which is not an object in time and space, the me that is the same in all beings, is the very self of Ishvara. This me that I am, which indwells the physical body and the sukshma sharira and the whole universe, from the standpoint of this physical body that is enjoying consciousness because of the subtle body, this body I take to be me. That's called vyavaharika. The vyavaharika jiva, the embodied jiva. Vyavahara means empirical reality, Ishvara's reality. Right? Here I am in this shared reality, this one where we can apply science, you know, the one that we can analyze, this reality that we can analyze, this reality where we can all have a shared experience. That's called vyavahara. So here I am, an embodied conscious being, within this vyavahara. And so I take myself because, let's put it like this, because I do not have self-knowledge, I take this conscious being that is me to be one with this body which is enjoying consciousness because of the sukshma sharira, which is reflecting consciousness. I take this whole package to be myself. And that means that I am here with you, and as long as I'm here and right now I'm healthy and my sense organs are all working, and eventually, like all of us, we will all pass on, we will all die. And then if you're a Hindu, you'll say, and I'll be reborn. Hopefully I'll have a good next birth because I followed Dharma to the best of my ability in this life, and I've really tried to be a good person, so I hope that I will attract positive karmas to me so that I can have another birth, right? But right now, here I am with this body, being this person, this transmigrating person. That's a Hindu. For a Christian, here I am for any types of Christianity and Buddhism and Islam, but say just for a normal Christian perspective, here I am as a Christian living this life, you know, trying to live a sacred life, trying to be a really good person, and knowing because I'm a Christian from the blessings of the Lord, you know, I will be taken to heaven as long as I don't, if I'm a Catholic, create any having mortal sins or anything. But then I've always gone to confession, so those mortal sins can be negated. Everything should be okay. When I die, I should go to heaven. Okay, that's a belief system. But that belief system is coming from me, this person who is here now, this is who I am, and this is what I believe will happen to me after death. For Hindu, this is who I am, this is what I believe, this is what the Veda says will happen to me after I die. I should be reborn. Christian will say, there's no such thing as rebirth. This is your only shot. You have this one life. Do well, be a good person so that you can go to heaven or purgatory and not go to hell. Don't commit any mortal sins. This is your shot. This is the one time. Be careful. And the Hindu will say, no. You have many, many, many times. If you have to go into some hell worlds, it'll only be temporary, you know, to just exhaust some bad karmas. You'll eventually come back here. You always have another chance. Don't worry so much about that. If you don't like this life, you've had many, many other lives, you get another life that you like better than this one, you just do your best in this life as well. It's just different, a totally different orientation, creating a different type of psyche. But whether it's you're a Hindu or a Buddhist or whatever you are, until you have self-knowledge, the least I would say is you're the reincarnating jiva, or you're the soul that goes to heaven. Right? But in terms of all practical purposes, you are the person who is here right now, and we'll see what happens afterwards. But I am this person here with all of you, you know, who's subject to birth and death and illness and all these various things, and I'm making my way through the world. This person who is here, when they get this person, and this person gains self-knowledge, what you realize is that this person, this me, the person that makes me, that you had thought was almost like an epiphenomenon of the body, a product of this body, mind, sense organs, you realize in fact yourself is not subject to time. Your being is not subject to time. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwara, and it's a whole creation, is a beautiful manifestation of your being. This body, mind, sense organs is not yours. There's no mine, there's no me, there's no mine. This is all belongs to Ishwara. So let Ishwara have it. Enjoy your prarabdha karma. Do what is there to be done to the best of your ability. Enjoy the ananda of yourself.